Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. In today's conversation, we speak with Alex Mann from Concentric and TimeChain. Concentric is a venture capital firm with a fund called TimeChain that invests in Bitcoin companies. We get into the thesis behind Bitcoin. Alex gives us his perspective on why he views this as such an asymmetric opportunity and how to think about early stage venture investing with regard to Bitcoin companies. It's a fascinating conversation. We hope you enjoy. And as a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only.
Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River, a full-service Bitcoin-only financial services company. From their customer support by actual U.S.-based humans to their newly announced 100% reserve custody, River's a place where I can confidently refer my friends and colleagues to buy their Bitcoin. To start or continue your own recurring Bitcoin buys with zero fees, use our exclusive link below, partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin.
Welcome to the Build with Bitcoin podcast. I'm co-host Israel Munoz. I'm joined today by Alex Mann. Alex, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Unfortunately, Lynn won't be joining us today, the other co-host for the podcast, but excited to get into this conversation, Alex. You were referred to us by another, you know, great founder that we've had a chance to interview, and we are going to be getting into what TimeChain is involved with, Concentric. Before we get into the venture capital conversation and how Bitcoin, the Bitcoin thesis fits into that, we'd like to start with a little bit of, you know, maybe who you are, Alex. You have a fascinating story as a founder, being involved in startups earlier on in your career. So, you know, if you can maybe start there, Alex, can you share a little bit about your background and what point of that story Bitcoin was introduced into your life?
Yeah, of course. I grew up in Cambridge, England. I did physics at university, British universities. Basically, at the upper level, they tried to push into banking, consulting, or law, and I didn't want to do any of those things. I thought they were extremely boring. Especially, I did a couple of internships at the large investment banks in London, and I hated it. So I moved to Mexico, and there was a company that recruited me out there for, it was a tech company. It was basically the e-commerce, clone of Amazon across Latin America. Amazon didn't exist at the time. And so I moved over there. I was like 22 or something. And for some reason, they let me run a few countries for them. I didn't speak any Spanish. So I'm pretty sure I was useless, but it was amazing sort of learning experience. My direct boss was, ended up being this guy called Carlos Garcia, who remains to this day probably the best business mind I ever came across. And he went on to found a company called Kavak, which is, I think, one of the most valuable tech companies in Latin America now. So anyway, I worked with him very fortunate to work with him and his team for a year, year and a half, maybe a year and a half at least, actually. And then I moved back to London and built a tech company in London. It was basically a ghost kitchen business. So, ghost kitchens, dark kitchens, they're these sort of like out of sight, out of mind kitchens that cook food. And then when you order online, that's where it comes from. It doesn't come from a restaurant anymore. Anyway, so it's this sort of like low cost food infrastructure that we were building across London. We did that for a couple of years. It was, it was a real journey. We raised, a few million bucks to scale this thing, probably reached 150 staff and reasonably significant revenue. But we got the politics of fundraising wrong, and that business ended up not making it. And so after that, I wanted to try and build a bank, but I met some guys who were building a venture capital fund that was called Concentric. And at the time in London, there were very few VCs who had actually tried to build stuff before. They tended to come from that banking, consulting, or law background. And I had not enjoyed my interaction with venture capitalists to date. Well, you know, we were building these other companies. It was pretty painful. So I thought, okay, maybe I could add some value for a little bit, and I'll do this, get back on my feet for maybe a year or so, and then go off and build something else. But I ended up really enjoying it. We raised, I think the guys at the time had just set up Concentric, then maybe $5 million under management, something like that, 5 million euros, made a couple of investments. The challenge was to build a 30 billion euro fund and then to deploy that across Europe. which we did. We sort of raised 30 million euros, began to deploy that across Europe, and I spent some time in Africa. And it was in South Africa where I came across a company building on top of Bitcoin. And so I was already familiar with Bitcoin because, you know, people had been talking about it. This was sort of 2016, 2017 time. But I'd never really understood it or investigated it because I'd never seen any commercial applications of it. So it just didn't fit the remit of things I was interested in. But I was in South Africa and I came across a company that was using Bitcoin to move money cross borders on behalf of large institutions. And that's when I first saw, well, actually, this is just, not just, but this is a more performant Rails layer for e-commerce or for commerce than what we have right now. And so that's when I became really interested in it. It was around 2017 time. We'd led the investment into that company. It's now a really successful company. And ever since then, I just became kind of obsessed with it as I investigated it further.
Okay. And you were already at Concentric when you first, you know, came across this company in South Africa?
Yep.
Okay. Okay. Now, well, yep. Interesting. I think there'll be some, you know, some good pieces to get into there. Because part of our audience is a little more of the traditional venture capital or traditional investment world. You know, out of curiosity, you mentioned a couple of things in your background story. Was the ghost kitchen idea, did that come from, by chance, your experiences in Mexico? I don't know if it was already at the time, you know, a pretty established market in Mexico. I'd have to research when that all took off, but is that where the inspiration came from, out of curiosity, before you got into your own business?
No, actually, it was completely unrelated. We didn't set out to build ghost kitchens. What we'd set out to do was to build the lowest cost food infrastructure possible. I just thought that sounded like a really interesting challenge. How do you build an infrastructure capable of feeding people, you know, three times a day, for as lower cost as possible? And it was, you could start to see how it might be the case, because technology was enabling maybe the automation of the kitchen and the automation of logistics. And logistics was the most expensive part formerly. But now that could be automated. And we actually did some experiments back in the time with drones. I mean, it was way too early, but, we did okay. Mess around with that stuff. And so the lowest cost food infrastructure possible, the design for that ended up being basically ghost kitchens. So this concept of ghost or dark kitchens wasn't really in the sort of current paradigm at the time. This was pretty early. It was like maybe 2014, 2015, something like that.
Okay. No, well, fascinating. I mean, and honestly, I think it's a problem that still needs to be solved in many parts of the world, right? So interesting, I guess, side story there, but and for those who might not know, your previous boss, you were speaking to Carlos Cavac, I believe they were actually the first unicorn in Mexico. So between, you know, luck and perseverance, I'm sure, but sounds like you had a phenomenal early years of, you know, I guess, coaching and experience as a young entrepreneur, Alex.
Yeah. I got really lucky. It wasn't by design at all. It's just sort of how it sort of evolved and happened. But yeah, I never really learned. Well, the most I learned, the most valuable experience, I think, was on the entrepreneurial side when you're actually trying to build stuff.
Yeah.
And got very lucky having that sort of early mentor in. Well, mentor is probably a strong word, but the early team that I worked with ended up building that company called Cavac. So I saw the building blocks of what it took to build an amazing company. And it's those people that I personally look for now. It's the archetypes of founders when we go out and back companies either through Concentric or Timechain.
Yeah, which I'm sure, you know, adds plenty of value to your role at Concentric and Timechain as well. You know, but before we get into those aspects, Alex, I mean, what was it that we like to get into each person's kind of personal perspective on Bitcoin? You know, you mentioned you started studying it when you saw this use case in South Africa as, you know, better rails. When you started getting into Bitcoin, what part of it exactly was it that drew you in, and what did that develop into for you as, you know, as a person and as a professional? How did that Bitcoin story develop as you started studying it?
This sort of stuff can get a little bit deep and a little bit heavy quite quickly because it's such a profound thing. But at a high level, what I would say is I got interested in 2017 because I saw how it was adding value to a commercial operation. And so it wasn't this like trivial technology that people were making it out to be if you just read the FT or whatever other sort of newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
So that was sort of like first insight, which sort of piqued my curiosity. And then as you start to understand it, you start to think, well, okay, there's good reasons why the number can go up. And so I should personally be financially invested into it. But actually, it was around 2020 during the COVID lockdowns when it started to become something that I considered to be existential. Because I was living alone during COVID in my flat in London. And when the lockdowns came in, the response from the British government was very strict. And you have to put it in context of English history, where English history is basically 2,000 years of people fighting to increase their civil liberties. Very proud tradition. English law is recognized all around the world. It's considered to be the home of democracy to a large extent. And what happened over that period, whether it was justified or not, is a different question. And I will get into, you know, the whole COVID stuff. But what was interesting was that the government decided overnight that you were basically not allowed to leave your home. You weren't allowed to go to work. You weren't allowed to go to the gym. All civil liberties were suspended. And there was no recourse. There was nothing you could do about it. And that was when I felt like, actually, there is no balance between the power the state can exert over the individual and the recourse the individual has to push back against that. The only technology or tool at scale that felt like it had a chance to empower the individual as opposed to these large third parties, which were becoming increasingly large, it was just becoming increasingly obvious to me, was Bitcoin. And so Bitcoin became this kind of like necessity, and it became for me the sort of professional pursuit from that point onward was to try to contribute to the growth of the Bitcoin network and the Bitcoin ecosystem. Because I just felt like actually this is really important that this thing succeeds and it's in the hands of as many people as possible. And so it was around about that time as well where I witnessed the amount of venture capital money flowing into the crypto ecosystem. And my response was, well, okay, I'm either going to build something. I need to contribute to the Bitcoin network somehow. I'm either going to build something or actually we have this quite successful venture capital operation. There's a huge amount of venture capital dollars flowing into crypto. Let's try and redress that balance. And it actually turns out to be the best business case possible for a few reasons. One, if you believe the case that Bitcoin is money, money is the largest market on the planet, you're attacking the biggest market there is in existence. And two, the amount of venture money flowing into crypto means that Bitcoin deals are underpriced. There's a capital allocation issue that we could solve and make a really compelling business case out of. And that's when TimeChain was basically born, a venture capital fund for companies building on top of Bitcoin specifically.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't agree more. And we've covered some of these aspects in previous conversations as well about this particular misallocation of capital between, you know, the general Web3 crypto space and Bitcoin only infrastructure, right? But you just put it quite great there. Talk about disruption. You're attacking the largest market as you mentioned, and then on top of that, due to just it being still early stage, you still have lots of that infrastructure and businesses that have yet to be built, right? So, the opportunity, of course, is massive. But for some people who may be listening, Alex, who still have not yet quite landed on the differentiation between what sets Bitcoin apart, you know, you mentioned a little bit of how it can get pretty profound pretty quickly. You're mentioned to it as an economic battery for humanity. I mean, there's a lot of kind of flourishing and positive aspects to what Bitcoin provides to us as a society. Why, from, you know, maybe both the philosophical level and technology level, why is Bitcoin different than the other cryptos for those who may not have that clarity yet?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a really important question. And there's a few different ways to answer it. I think for me, it just comes down to the fact that it's an asset without an issuer, and it cannot be controlled by third parties. And the more work you do around Bitcoin and other crypto protocol, and frankly, pretty much anything else in existence, the more confidence you'll get that Bitcoin is an asset that cannot be controlled or manipulated by third party. That's the key difference. And that's what makes it neutral. And because of its other monetary properties, basically a neutral monetary platform. Whereas all other cryptocurrencies have varying degrees of moneyness, you can probably argue, but they're not neutral. And because they're not neutral, which means that they're controlled by a third party, in the case of Ethereum or something, the Ethereum Foundation, it's a bit hidden. Ethereum's, you know, it's like a lot of smoke and mirrors with Ethereum. With all the other crypto protocols, it's just transparent. It's obvious, you know, Solana or whatever it is, they just have a company controlling them. Well, with Ethereum, it's the Ethereum Foundation or the lead developers or whatever. If they wake up one day and decide to change the monetary protocol, you know that monetary protocol is going to get changed. The Bitcoin is not how it works. There is nobody who can change the monetary protocol unilaterally. It's probably not even possible going forward to change the monetary protocol to any meaningful extent at all anymore. Suffice to say, Bitcoin is a neutral monetary protocol that cannot be manipulated or controlled by third parties. And that dramatically expands the addressable market, because now institutions and even nation states, as well as individuals, can opt into that neutral monetary protocol, have confidence that a third party can't interfere with the operations of that business, nation state, or individual. And that's why it's so important, the fact that it's neutral, basically. So I don't know if that answered your question in the most compelling way, but that's at least the way I think about it when we attack it from a venture capital perspective. This is a platform that has the most economic potential because it's neutral, which means everybody can use it, and as an incentive to use it, everything else doesn't. And then you can see that in two ways from the market. One, there's a reason El Salvador adopted Bitcoin standard, not the Ethereum standard.
Mm-hmm.
And to my estimation, it's because it's neutral. And two, if you look at the Bitcoin market cap and then add up the market cap of the next 20 or 30 coins combined, probably 50, and they're all heavily manipulated, you'll still get less than the market cap of Bitcoin. And Bitcoin has no foundation, no CEO, no marketing department. These other crypto protocols have had hundreds of billions of venture capital dollars pumped into them, and the value of the protocols is still probably less than the money that was invested. And if you add them up, it's still less than Bitcoin, which has none of these, you know, supposed centralization advantages. So there's probably a few of the differences that I think about.
Yeah, no, well, I appreciate the framing around that, Alex, because it is such an important an important topic, and it's still, you know, creates certain confusion. And I mean, you know, the way I look at it, it's from Ethereum down, anything other than Bitcoin that's out there, I mean, you're talking about mutable protocols, you're talking about centralized protocols, and thus not hard monetary aspects as well. So you basically lose everything that made Bitcoin valuable and innovative in the first place, right? And so if you're, and even from a, and that introduces risk as well, right? Even from a technology side, if I'm an entrepreneur wanting to build a long-term valuable business, which is what venture capital is backing, really, right? And if I'm an entrepreneur looking for the long term on a solid technology stack, I mean, you just have so many more areas of vulnerability and risk with something that can be muted, that can be censored, that can be manipulated, and is constantly changing its technology roadmap, right? So It's an important point to differentiate. I mean, all that to say, you know, I appreciate the framing around that, especially as, you know, someone whose day to day is evaluating what companies to invest in, right? And specifically at TimeChain with a Bitcoin focus. So, you know, maybe
can I just make I think there's two points that are just worth making that.
Yeah,
I think some of these points home as well. Crypto to me is much more equivalent to fiat, and I have this line that I used in the. I'm pretty sure I stole it from someone. This line that we use in the latest TimeChain investor update, which was that Ethereum just replaces the central bankers with the nerds. It's no different. You're just swapping out one elite for another. Whereas in Bitcoin, there is no elite. And that gets to your point around these protocols being mutable. Well, fiat is mutable. The monetary protocol can change and they can create new units. They do that in crypto. They do that in fiat. Bitcoin sort of solved all those issues, which is why it's much more interesting and exciting. And the other point I'd make, which gets into the weeds of investing in early stage companies a little bit, but I think is really important and is not made clear by venture capitalists at all, because there's an incentive distortion issue with crypto versus Bitcoin. But it's the idea of the tokens.
Mm-hmm.
So when you invest in early stage companies, and when we would build early stage companies and invest in them now through Concentric, what we're always looking for is some evidence of product market fit. And product market fit means that the market values your product. And the most obvious way to tell that is, well, are they paying for it? Are people paying for it? Do they pay more for it over time as you launch more features? Do they tell their friends about it? Do they stay with the product over a reasonable amount of time? What are the usage stats? All those sorts of things. So when you decide to invest money in an early stage company, you want to know that there's product market fit, because that's your signal that the product's ready to scale. So that if you pour sales and marketing dollars into the business, you're not just throwing them into a black hole, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, crypto completely obscures that signal from the market, which is already hard to discern through the launch of tokens. So what they do is that they launch a product, then they'll say to the community, well, if you use this product, we'll give you this token. So they've completely broken the feedback process between the product and the market, because you don't know if your users are using the product to get the token, which they can then dump on some unsuspecting people later on, or because they actually like the thing in the first place. And that's why, in part, I think a lot of these crypto protocols end up going nowhere, is because they have no idea if they're building a useful product or not, because the feedback loop between the market and the management team is gone.
Yeah, and you've distorted the incentives right from the get-go, both for the founding team and for the early investors, because then, I mean, you know, just speaking plainly and honestly, the incentives are just to get liquidity out quickly, right? I mean, why build a long-term business when you can get, you know, multiples on your investments in a short period of time by just pumping this thing?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep, and they've done that now for 10 years very successfully. They've raised a lot of money. They made a lot of money, sorry. But there's not a huge amount of focus, a huge amount come out of it.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's unfortunate that that's kind of how some things have developed in the VC space. And I think what gives it a slightly tainted image currently, we did an episode actually with Nico and Andy from Ego Death, and they were speaking a little bit to that as well. And how hopefully, you know, what Bitcoin introduces from a long-term thinking and an incentives point of view will bring VC back to its origins, to truly, you know, funding long-term businesses and founders. All that to say, thanks for that clarity, because it can be easy to get quickly confused and misled in this space, right? So it's important to just kind of differentiate why Bitcoin is different and why Bitcoin businesses are different than the rest of the crypto and Web3 space. You know, getting back to the venture capital firm, you're at Concentric, Alex. Can you give us an overview of Concentric as a VC firm, and then TimeChain the fund, how that fits into it? And also, who are the other partners at Concentric?
Yep. So Concentric is the umbrella group. It's based out of London and Copenhagen. It started about 7 years ago. I've been there for 6 years. We basically run three funds at Concentric. There's the main software fund, which invests in European, mostly European, but also some Latin American, early Series A projects, 2-3 million euros at a time. We have a fund of funds that invests in complementary fund managers all over the world in sectors that we're interested in. And then we have Timechain, and Timechain is our Bitcoin only venture capital fund. I focus pretty much exclusively on Timechain at this point, but I'm one of four partners. The other partners are basically experienced venture capital professionals. They've been in the industry, between them for, I don't know, probably 80 years or something.
Okay.
And focus more on Concentric, which is like, you know, traditional venture capital stuff. So, financial services, insurance, logistics, whatever. The amazing benefit for Timechain and the Bitcoin founders that we support is that they get to leverage the traditional connections of the main venture capital fund. So, you know, we invest in a Lightning payment business or something, and they want to test that out in traditional financial services arena, or we have all the connections ready made and we can go and open up those doors and help them get into those companies. And we can also bring the learnings and the insight from Timechain and present that to traditional financial services and use that as a way to make them aware of what's going on in Bitcoin and try and bring them into the Bitcoin space. So it's a really useful flow of information between the main Concentric fund and activities and Timechain itself.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you extend the value of the network you guys have, you know, both as a fund and the portfolio of companies, right? So when you first were speaking to the other partners about Bitcoin infrastructure and Bitcoin itself, Alex, I mean, were there any particular challenges or pushbacks, both from maybe convincing your other partners at Concentric on why now is a good time to begin investing in Bitcoin companies, and also with, you know, raising LP capital for the fund? What was there any, I guess, contentious points? Was it easier or harder than you imagined it initially?
Oh, it was way harder. Yeah. I don't know if it was harder than I imagined. I knew it was going to be hard, but it was very difficult to put together the first fund, because you have to remember this was also 22. FTX had blown up, the lenders had blown up, Bitcoin had gone from 17-16K, load of fraud and scams in the space, all these tokens. A lot of VCs have made a lot of money. So, off these tokens as well, because they obviously timed the market very well. So the questions would be, why Bitcoin? Why can't we do other cryptocurrencies? Everything's just blown up in the space. If it is going to come back, you know, is it going to come back in the way that, you're expecting, all the sort of usual stuff. So I wouldn't, I mean, once we'd sort of gone through that process over a number of months, then obviously, you know, very supportive, very interested, and could see why it was such an amazing opportunity. And so we sort of jumped into it with both feet. From LP's perspective, you know, the first fund was put together more based on trust. You know, we had a good track record out of Concentric. We have a bunch of family offices that and institutions that we work with in Concentric who trust our judgment. And so when we came to them with this opportunity around Bitcoin, that they were keen to explore it. You know, one thing I'd say is that venture capital is supposed to be a hunt for asymmetry. And you only find those asymmetries by going against the market to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
Venture capital has not become that. Like, the vast majority of venture dollars is deployed into relatively safe plodding businesses where there is no technical R&D risk, but it's just like a sales and marketing risk. So people are looking for, well, this payments business or this SaaS company worked in the US. We'll roll it out in India or something. And the vast majority of venture funds deploy into where the business model is known, There's no technical risk because they're building on platforms that have been around and operational for 20 years. The question is, can you build an effective sales and marketing function and brand this in a way to get meaningful penetration for drive revenue when we can sell it? That's less risky, but it's more like a private equity type model. Timechain and other Bitcoin venture funds in the space are true venture capital funds because there's the risk profile is much more elevated. There's Bitcoin, which we obviously think is pretty low risk, but then there's, well, how is the technological stack on top of Bitcoin going to evolve? Is Lightning the right approach? Is Liquid, is Steady? How do they interoperate with one another? The tooling for Lightning is still not that great. So it's not that easy to use. So that all has to be built out. What's the right approach to building tooling? And then we have to go and build the market for Lightning as well. For people who are investing in venture because they want the asymmetries, this sort of stuff is perfect. But a lot of LPs in venture think they want that, but they actually don't. And that reflects in the deployment into, you know, SaaS, venture capital, or whatever.
Hearing you out there, I mean, it's basically just another consequence of, you know, what we've lived through just broadly in this era of cheaper money and, you know, cheap, easy money. It's just you end up having all this malinvestment because capital ends up just chasing more opportunistic short-term opportunities and incentives instead of this, you know, kind of long-term true value point of view, right? I completely agree.
Yeah, there's distortions throughout the capital allocation process, and that's reflected in venture capital. And I think a lot of it you can point down to the fact that, you know, money is mispriced, it's manipulated by central banks and all that sort of stuff. Part of it's probably cultural, and it's hard to tell if the culture is upstream or downstream of the economics. Well, you know, we obviously have our suspicions. But it's also probably fair to say it's a bit of a combination. But
once you establish Timechain, maybe we can fast forward to the more recent past here with your role there, Alex. As far as, you know, opportunities right now that you're seeing and just the maturity of Bitcoin businesses and the technology stack, since Lynn and I started this podcast in April, we've had the great opportunity to speak to quite a few of different founders in the Bitcoin space. And to me, what draws a little bit of my attention is it seems like there is a lot going on in medium of exchange applications to Bitcoin and the technology behind it. Layer twos, we've had conversations with, you know, companies building on Lightning, with companies building on Liquid. From your point of view as a VC fund in Bitcoin infrastructure, where are we as far as the maturity of the technology and business cases? What opportunities are you seeing, and is there anything in particular that's getting you excited right now?
Yeah, good question. And hard one to answer. Over the last 2 years, I think the ecosystem has moved forward in an exponential fashion, but we're still extraordinarily early. So the maturity of the tech stack has come on leaps and bounds, even over that 2 year period. There are multiple implementations of Lightning wallets. You can have non-custodial as well as custodial Lightning. Lightning works pretty well. The payment success rate is, you know, in the high 90s. But there are very few places that accept Lightning unless they're already Bitcoin maxis, basically. With Coinbase and Binance implementing Lightning, though, that's beginning to change, and I think you'll see a lot more of those. So the tech stack is maturing, but its accessibility is still probably minimal, and the awareness of the functionality of these technologies is even worse. Which is all things you'd expect. I don't think this is like a massive problem. This is what you'd expect as the ecosystem grows, or any ecosystem grows.
Right.
There's also a fair bit of misinformation that put out deliberately around protocols like Lightning, because people are selling their own L2s with, surprise, surprise, their own tokens on top of Bitcoin now. So that muddies the waters a little bit. But from my perspective, there's a few protocols we're really excited by. And we're investors in some as well. So, you know, I'm a little bit biased, but obviously really excited by Lightning, and we spend, a lot of, dollars deploying onto Lightning applications. We can talk about that in more depth if you like. We're very excited by things like Fedi and eCash. We're investors in Fedi. We're not investors in some of the other protocols, but I think they're great as well. And then there's like Bitcoin adjacent protocols like Nostr and that sort of stuff. So the building blocks to, create a lot of the applications that everyday people would want are there. They just have to be combined, and they have to be streamlined and packaged in a way that's easy for people to interact with. And that's the process we're ongoing with now. One other comment I would have is that whilst the advanced functionality is beginning to be there, so for example, multi-sig, non-custodial loans, or non-custodial Lightning payments, or federations that allow for pretty much like complete private, almost free transactions globally, speed of light. Whilst that is there, we still have to focus on building base level Bitcoin infrastructure. So for example, it was not easy for me to buy Bitcoin in England up until about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
When Strike launched, there were very few Bitcoin only exchanges with a nice, UX UI. And that's in England. My bank would block me from sending money to, Bitcoin exchanges. Well, there weren't Bitcoin exchanges, so there'd be crypto exchanges. Fees were high. It was clunky. You'd have to go into Coinbase or something and they'd sell you 10 different types of Bitcoin. It was just like generally a mess. You could use Revolut, but the fees were 2.5%. They would only let you withdraw $500 at a time, and it was all on chain. There was no Lightning. So even just simple applications of Bitcoin, which is, I want to use Bitcoin as a store of value asset. I need a reliable place to buy it from. I want to withdraw it to a non-custodial wallet, and I want them to make that easy for me, does not exist for a significant number of the world's population. And it only came to Europe recently with companies like Relay in on the continent and Strike in the UK. So we still, as a venture fund, we love the more sort of like advanced functionality, and I think it'll be very important over the next few years. But this simple stuff, like buying and selling Bitcoin, custodying it, and knowing how to do that, should not be overlooked. And we put a lot of emphasis on that as well as a fund.
I like what you mentioned there, Alex, because it kind of made me think, actually, I mean, personally, for example, so I've been involved, for, you know, around 10 years in the space. I'm tried a company myself or in those early days, but, the point being, the way I use Bitcoin now and the companies and services that I use for my Bitcoin needs now are actually completely different. I don't have one tool or service that I still used back then. All of that, by the way, in a very positive way. I mean, I'm glad that the services I use now are available, because they're much better than what I had available when I first started studying this. But it kind of goes to your point that this user experience and the infrastructure, I mean, we're at this inflection point where it's the technology stack is actually being built out and getting easier to use. And, you know, maybe to that point, Alex, so we had a conversation many episodes back with Vijay Boyapati, who made an interesting point. And I'd love to get your thoughts on this, and especially to maybe other VCs that may be listening to this conversation. But Vijay, he made the point that, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, I forget the exact time frame, but a few years back, he said there probably wasn't the case to be made that investing in early stage Bitcoin companies was a better risk return profile than just investing in BTC, the asset itself. He made that point that a few years back, he just personally did not see that case there as far as why invest in early stage Bitcoin companies versus BTC, the asset. But he said now the time does make sense for, you know, from, and this is to be clear, from a financial perspective and returns perspective, right? There can also be lots of, you know, other reasons why you may invest in early stage Bitcoin companies. But specifically to that point, Alex, I mean, do you, what would you say to why now as far as early stage Bitcoin companies?
Yeah. First, I don't think it's for everybody. So venture capital is very high risk pursuit. Honestly, typically, it's a pretty bad way to make money. So if you look at venture capital as an asset class in Europe, which I know the stats, I suspect it's probably a little bit better in the US, but I'm not sure that much better. 50% of venture capital funds will return less than one times the amount invested in them. So it's like a, it's like a power law, right? So it's a few number of funds that make extraordinary returns and everybody else kind of, some do okay and a lot unfortunately don't. So that's one thing to bear in mind. Venture capital is not for everybody and most people should probably just stack sats and not worry about anything else. But for those people who are interested in venture capital for whatever reason, a Bitcoin venture capital, if you believe that Bitcoin is a neutral monetary platform on top of which an economy will get built, which is what I firmly believe, then there must be value creation opportunities on top of that platform in excess of the rate of return of Bitcoin, because otherwise you would never deploy Bitcoin and you would never build the economy. So it's a bit of like a self-fulfilling prophecy or maybe even a self-referential argument, but you have to believe that an economy will get built on top of Bitcoin in Bitcoin terms. The way I see Bitcoin is that, frankly, it's like the dawn of a new civilization. Like there was the fiat civilization, there was the gold civilization, there was the fiat one. Now there's this Bitcoin one. Bitcoin is this neutral monetary platform that underpins that civilization. On top of it, a whole application layer has to get built. The parallels in the fiat economy would be everything from banks to payment processors to, frankly, universities, insurance companies, everything has to get built on top of this new Bitcoin economy. Some companies will make the transition well, some won't. That's the opportunity for venture capital funds. And those companies that get built on top of the Bitcoin economy will deliver returns in excess of the price appreciation of Bitcoin, because otherwise you would never spend the Bitcoin into the Bitcoin economy in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't know, that's how I think about it. In terms of why now, I think that comes to the previous question, which is the infrastructure and the tooling is now available for companies to combine these different parts from, you know, non-custodial loans to Lightning to whatever, create these new business models. And there is appetite from people who have denominated a significant portion of their wealth in Bitcoin to use these services and to interact with that economy rather than rely on this antiquated fiat economy. Mm-hmm. The most trivial example is I need to send money between UK and US. I don't have a Bitcoin because it's cheaper and quicker. My bank takes actually considerable fees on both ends, just even to move money in dollars from a UK account to a US account. And it takes, you know, takes a few hours. And that's about as good as payment rails cross-border gets, the UK-US. So that's why now I think that the technology exists to start building that economy, and more people are going to want to opt into it and interact with it and use services denominated in it because it's more performant and cheap.
I view it pretty similarly, and I'm glad you mentioned those, you know, I guess, setting the context for what to expect from returns. And this, as a reminder, is for educational purposes only. We're not speaking to specific advice here, but, you know, I do remember personally when I was involved in the VC industry as well, looking at those average returns and statistics, and they weren't too different than your S&P 500 returns, right? I mean, you're looking at, you know, pretty standard bar there as far as what you're getting year over year, just as industry averages, right? So what Bitcoin provides is this asymmetry in this massively disruptive technology and financial asset. You start with BTC, the financial asset itself, completely agree. That's the starting point. But then, second to that, to your point, if you believe that there will be an entire economy built on top of this sound money and technology, then you absolutely will have some businesses not easy to pick, not easy to deploy. And it's hard to pick the winners, of course, but you absolutely will have many of the largest businesses of tomorrow being built, on top of Bitcoin rails. So I think that speaks to I guess, the growing size of also Bitcoin investors and Bitcoin VC. It's still tiny, but you can definitely tell it's picking up, which is a very healthy sign of maturity. Getting into TimeChain then, Alex, the Bitcoin infrastructure fund within Concentric, what stage do you guys invest in? What's the average, check size? What can you provide there as far as your focus within Bitcoin infrastructure?
Yeah. Right now we operate in between pre-seed and Series A.
Okay.
So pre-seed will be basically, a couple of guys just come up with an idea, and we will do that in rare circumstances, but we will do it if we're comfortable with the team. So we've known them for some time. There's a strong relationship there, and we're comfortable with, or we feel like we know a lot about the sector. So we have a sense as to how the product should evolve and that there'd be demand for it. Probably seed and early Series A is more common for us. Our average check size is about $500,000. The most we've done so far is about $1.2 million into any single company. We've made 16 investments so far, and we have a Bitcoin position as well, so 17 positions in total. And we will probably do another 3 or 4 companies out of this fund. Then the challenge will be to raise the next fund and probably increase the amount we're able to deploy as the ecosystem matures. So over the last few years, the ecosystem's been so nascent and the companies have been so early that frankly, they haven't needed a huge amount of money. Mm-hmm. It'd be difficult to figure out how to spend $2 million at a time in some of these companies, because the risk is that you'd overcapitalize some of them, and that has its own pitfalls. So you want to capitalize companies appropriately at an early stage. You don't want to overcapitalize them because it can lead to a lot of excesses and like lack of discipline because you feel like perhaps you've spent the money. But now the ecosystem is maturing to such an extent that you can start thinking about how you can comfortably deploy some of that money, some of those larger checks.
Makes sense. It is starting to mature to the point where you probably can deploy, follow-on capital, or companies are maturing to the Series A and above. So I guess, that kind of led to another question I had, which was whether you planned on launching another fund, which sounds like the answer is yes, down the line. And so that fund, then it sounds like we'll have as far as stage is concerned, we'll have a broader reach. I mean, you'll be looking at maybe from early pre-Series A to post-Series A, or have you not thought through those specifics quite yet?
Yeah, I would just say for TimeChain 1, we probably indexed slightly more towards seed stage. For TimeChain 2, we had the opportunity to deploy more meaningful follow-on capital into these companies as they break out. So in TimeChain 1, what we're seeing now is a number of companies that are really successful. So they're already profitable. They're growing really fast. And that's quite rare that's extremely rare for an early stage venture fund to have companies that are actually more profitable, let alone, being profitable.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because Bitcoin companies, once they become profitable, they can actually start building a Bitcoin position. And as that Bitcoin appreciates in value, there's not a necessity to raise capital necessarily. But magnitude of the market opportunity for these Bitcoin companies is so large that probably deploying, $5 million, $10 million into these companies so they can expand their sales and marketing function and develop new products, is really, really worthwhile, because it's just a wide open space. There might be 2 or 3 companies in a specific section of Lightning globally. And so they've got the whole world to fight over. But you know, if you invested into some SaaS payroll business or something, there's probably 10 to 15 companies per geography that you're fighting with.
Yeah.
So the opportunity to deploy money into this space, I think is really quite compelling from a venture capital lens at this point in time.
Yeah, no, you know, I believe so as well. And from what I've seen, it's still very much so in a kind of asymmetric in a way opportunity compared to, you know, more general VC. What I've been seeing based on some discussions with, you know, some startup founders in the Bitcoin space so far, my impression is that you are seeing a disproportional number of Bitcoin companies in a positive way that are already achieving positive revenue, profitability. Maybe they're stacking big. I mean, a few of the companies we've talked to have told us precisely that. Yeah, I mean, we're profitable. And so, of course, we're going to start, you know, stacking Bitcoin for the long term, and maybe it protects us from future dilution. And as far as sectors, Alex, I mean, at TimeChain, you guys are sector agnostic. Is there anything you don't invest in? Do you stay away from hardware, maybe? Can you give us an idea of your thesis there?
Yes. So we're pretty much happy to invest across the Bitcoin stack. There are some provisos. So, for example, there are Bitcoin projects that launch tokens. We'll never do those. There are some Bitcoin projects that require a soft fork. We're not going to do those. There are some Bitcoin projects that are now cross-chain. Not particularly interested in those either. So there are some sort of like provisos whereby we just, even if it's a Bitcoin project, not principles that we're interested in sort of supporting or pursuing on top of Bitcoin. But obviously, it's a free and open market, so other people can. That's fine. And the best solution should win at the end of the day. It's just not sort of philosophically aligned with how we think the Bitcoin ecosystem will evolve. But we're happy to invest across the Bitcoin stack. We tend not to do hardware as well, but that's just more a case of that requires a degree of capital intensity that we're not set up for at this stage. And that may change. And also, like the team's expertise is a bit more in scaling software applications than hardware applications, but it's certainly something that we're open to in the future. Very, very fond of simple, well-executed applications on top of Bitcoin in new geographies, frankly, just because I think it's needed. So two companies in the portfolio, Relay and Beeper. Both of these companies are on and off ramps for Bitcoin in Europe and Brazil, respectively.
Yeah.
And Bitcoin only, so very focused, very dedicated. They can begin to integrate other best-in-class Bitcoin solutions to offer lending products or Lightning wallets or whatever it is. But it's just like a financial services hub for people who take Bitcoin really seriously. And I think that's really important. So somebody doesn't have to go to Coinbase and go on the, you know, the shitcoin journey that that everybody goes on, and we can just sort of short-circuit that. So we're very, very fond of finding those sorts of companies and deploying them globally. Then other sort of like Bitcoin critical infrastructure that we've invested in, or what we consider to be Bitcoin critical infrastructure, would be things like Debify, which is non-custodial loans, Anchor Watch, which is like an insured custody solution for large institutions who want to buy $100 billion and have recourse in case something goes wrong. So it's, you know, fully insured. Companies like Fedi, which offer private and highly scalable payments. Then we're also very fond of integrating the Lightning Network into traditional sectors of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to this company we supported in South Africa, who are moving money cross-border on behalf of large institutions using Bitcoin, well, there are ways to automate energy contracts over the Lightning Network and move the energy grid to Lightning rails, for example.
Sidnota by chance?
Okay. Then there's a couple of other companies we back that are similar, that are doing similar things, but in the telecommunications sector. Like, you want to move money between phone carriers with traditional fiat payment rails. It's very difficult to do because everyone's on a 30, 60, 90-day payment terms. There's lots of fraud. All these financing solutions come in to try and speed up the velocity of money, but that costs. Lightning just collapses all those costs. Then there's this idea of Lightning firewalls as well, which is becoming increasingly popular and interesting, which I think is very compelling. But suffice to say, integrating the Lightning Network into the traditional sector of the economy is important. and a key area of focus. And another one that I'm sort of increasingly interested in, because I think just the tooling is way better, the UX UI is way better, is just facilitating retail payments on Lightning. Mm. I think the challenge historically has been, well, what's the business model? And are people really ready for it? But I just have a sense that actually, yes, an increasing number of people will be ready to pay with Bitcoin over Lightning, despite the fact that Bitcoin price is appreciating. But I think people are comfortable just to live on a Bitcoin standard. I basically fully live on a Bitcoin standard. And that means that I need to spend Bitcoin and I'm just sort of okay with doing it. And Lightning offers an amazing experience. And the proliferation of Lightning wallets, even through guys like Coinbase now, just means that I think the market is beginning to be there for retail Lightning payments, and keen to explore that.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly agree. And the technology and user experience is starting to get to that point where I can have a great experience using Bitcoin without even maybe, you know, needing to know exactly how it works or, you know, the deeper layers to Bitcoin. And of those you spoke to, and thanks for citing those, I mean, geographically dispersed examples as well. I mean, we've spoken to Fedi, we've spoken to Relay, I believe from the ones you mentioned, those two particular ones we do have previously published episodes on for anyone interested in getting into maybe some of those specifics. But we could talk for much longer on some of the specific points that you covered in this episode, Alex. It's a very deep conversation, both the Bitcoin and then, you know, the investment philosophy behind backing Bitcoin companies. But just, you know, want to be conscious of time, and, you know, and thank you for also, you know, making the time to come on Build with Bitcoin. You know, maybe to close things off, Alex, Concentric, Time Chain, you guys are active. You'll continue to be active in the Bitcoin space. Where can people find you? Are there any events that you participate in? How can people get in touch?
Yeah, over the last couple of years, I don't know, pretty much like 30 or 40 countries going to different events. So I'm just trying to find people building on top of Bitcoin so that we could support them. So usually at various events, I think the next one I'll be going to Lugano, Plan B conference there, and maybe even SatConf in Brazil, and adopting Bitcoin in El Salvador. And for anybody who hasn't been to a Bitcoin event, really worth attending some of these ones. In Europe, you have Baltic Honey Badger, which I highly recommend. There's also Bitcoin Prague, Bitcoin Amsterdam. There's like a proliferation of these events now in various geographies, and for people looking to get a bit more up the curve on the Bitcoin ecosystem, I think these are really great places to go. So I'd highly recommend them. So anyway, I'll be there at a number of these. There's obviously the TimeChain website, timechain.concentric.vc. And I think my email's there as well. So people can shoot me an email if they ever have any questions or want to discuss something.
Well, I mean, thanks again, Alex. We truly do appreciate it. And, you know, maybe we can have you back on at a later time to get an update on how you're seeing things in the Bitcoin VC world. But, you know, thanks again, and look forward to staying in touch.
Thanks so much. This was great.
Thanks for listening to the Build with Bitcoin podcast. If you found benefit in what you heard in this episode, we'd truly appreciate it if you would like, share, or leave a comment on whichever platform you're listening, as this helps others find us, which is especially important for a new podcast. And as a reminder, our content is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only, and is not to be considered investment advice or recommendation to invest in any company or asset mentioned in the podcast. Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River, a full-service, 100% reserve custody Bitcoin-only financial services company. For your next Bitcoin purchase, use our exclusive link, partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin. Thank you sincerely for being a part of the Build with Bitcoin community.